So we're going to get started. Apologies for technical delay. We do have the room, though, until 3, so I'm going to make sure I pack in all the information for you guys. I'm going to answer all your questions, so when you leave here, you're going to know how to write the best CV for your internship application. I know it says here CV and cover letter. That's tomorrow's session, same time, same place. If you want to come back, it's going to be me again. Lucky you. Yes?
Two things. First of all, is it assumed that's the same thing as a job CV?
Because he's going to record you too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is it assumed that this is also for job CVs, or is there a difference? No.
There's not a major difference. No. I'm just going to speak in internship technology terms, I guess you could say, but it's the same. You're going to get the same pieces of advice if you came to see me one-on-one on how to write a great job application. Plus, the word internship is very flexible, and it depends on your own definition. An internship is like a summer job, a career-related job, a contract job, so technically it's a job.
Okay, and then will these slides be posted somewhere?
I can send them to you. If you guys want to shoot me an email, I'll give you my email address at the end.
Cool.
And then absolutely I will. And as you can tell, it's being recorded, so it'll also be available on the Internship Office Network website. Sounds good? Okay, so we'll get rolling. Out of curiosity, though, before I get rolling with my spiel, I'd love to know, because it's a small room, what faculty, what department you're in, and what application you're going to be making in the immediate future. That way I could tailor any comments, suggestions, tips, and advice to your particular situation, which I think is to your benefit. So I'm going to ask the job guy in the front right away. Okay. Oh, well, good on you for being here, taking advantage of the event. I think that's great. And yourself?
Hello. My name is Enrica. I'm a major in poli sci and a minor in management. I'm here today because I want to tailor my CV and my cover letter for an internship that's more humanitarian-based for the summer. So I was looking on the website, and I'm really interested in a political science one in Southeast Asia that I know you guys have. And then last week I heard about one in Cuba for the food. Well, I was just very interested by those, so I will be tailoring that.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm going to teach you exactly how to customize every application you make from here on in. Yourself, sir?
Hello, my name is Simon. I am presently looking to do a research internship. I'm not quite sure it requires a CV or a cover letter, but it'll be skills transferable for applications for masters. So, yeah.
All right, and the research internship or opportunity you're looking for, it was that in academia or outside of academia or either one?
It's with ARIA. It's inside academia.
Okay. Yeah. Slight differences when you're talking about an academic application versus an industry-based or organization-based application, but I'm going to give you some tips and advice, and then afterwards you can always make an appointment to see a career advisor one-on-one at the CAPS office, the Career Planning Service, and then you can have it checked for your particular situation and application. That goes for everybody, not just you, just so you know.
Perfect.
And you?
Hi, I'm Sandra. I'm majoring in biology in the Faculty of Science. And I was just interested in knowing how to make a CV. Maybe I'm planning on doing an internship this summer, but I don't know yet what.
Excellent. Okay, great. So we have about 40, 45 minutes to get through the material. Please let me know if I talk too fast, because I want to make sure you get everything. As a point of reference, this is a little too far for me, so 1 second. There we go. The learning outcomes, because anytime CAPS does a presentation, we always want to tell you what the learning outcomes are. As a career advisor that's been at CAPS for a number of years, I'm over 10, so I don't tell the number out loud. I want to make sure that at the end of it, you're taught what I think I'm going to teach you, and that's really important for us. So most importantly is how to make an application that's going to get you on the yes pile, not the no pile. I think a lot of people don't realize you get screened in and out within 30 seconds of somebody looking over your application. So I want to tell you what are the major things that would get you on that no pile so it doesn't happen to you. We're going to identify your skill set, tell you how to lay it out properly, how to customize it, and most importantly, to be honest, is the final, or second to last one, sorry, is applying the 5 P's of your CV. Because at the end of the day, when you come to my office and you want me to look at it, these are the things, these are the 5 P's that I apply, and I think most people in human resources or of a hiring capacity apply those same 5 P's. So you're going to have to stick around to find out what they are. I know the final bullet is in... is related to the cover letter portion, which we're doing tomorrow. It's just to give you a heads up of what we might be covering or what we will be covering. So screening out, not in. So basically this is what a lot of applications, this is basically when somebody's looking at your CV, the things that would put you in the out pile instead of the in pile. Inappropriately addressed, which I think you guys are quite familiar, is a worse thing to do. Also the fact that an application has a poor layout or poor structure. And what it means there is, of course, that has to happen. And I lost my mouse. So let's hope that doesn't happen too often, because that's annoying. Okay. Poor layout, poor structure that doesn't reflect the skills required for the internship or for the job that you're applying for. In essence, if I'm looking over your CV, I have 20 to 30 seconds is what I'm doing. I'm looking for buzzwords. I'm looking for things to pop at me. And if it takes me too long to find it, I'm going to think it's not there. So that's why it's really important to think of who's receiving the CV, who's going to be reading it, and what are the things that they're looking for, and that you make sure those are the primary sections. So I know everybody has to have a master CV, and you got one. You probably had one since high school that has the typical sections that we're going to cover afterwards, laid out in a very typical order because that's what you were told to do. And I'm going to give you all the information you need on how to mess it all up so it speaks to the reader, because that's basically what we're going to be doing. When you have a summary or an objective that's not focused or is too generic, looking for an internship to enhance my skills, that basically tells a reader absolutely nothing. The way I like to look at it is it's a mini cover letter. It's as if they didn't read the cover letter or your email. That's what you want to be including in the beginning, and I'm going to go over that in detail. Poor grammar, poor spelling, overall poor preparation. So if you don't put any time and effort in putting it together, you're going to be screened out very quickly. So, like I mentioned already, you probably have that standard CV already put together. But now what you got to think of is what you bring to the table. What is it that you have to offer this future employer, supervisor, organization that's different from everybody else? Granted, you're looking for an internship to gain experience. So I totally get it that you guys feel that you are in a position where I have nothing to offer. What do you mean? This is exactly why I want this internship, is so I can offer something to somebody else. But you do, because you are at a certain stage and age in your life that you have experiences, and you have accumulated a lot of knowledge inside and outside of an academic institution. So yes, your strongest selling point is probably the fact that you're at McGill and that you're in a particular program, because the internship or job you want is in relation to that. But you've done other things, I'm assuming, in your life, besides going to school, which you've done since the age of 5. You've had many opportunities to gain skill sets from your summer jobs, your part-time jobs, your extracurricular activity, your volunteer, your community organizations, even sports, music, traveling. All this make up who you are today and what help you qualify yourself and put yourself ahead of somebody else when it comes to making an internship application. So at CAPS we often refer to different skill sets that you bring to the table, your hard skills and soft skills. Anybody have an idea of which is which or what is what? Yes, sir. That's right. Yeah, your soft skills are more your transferable skills, your communication, your ability to work with others, and your hard skills are much more technical. It can be computer, lab, equipment, specific knowledge in a particular area, so would be more technical, almost what I could test you on. I can test you on your hard skills. I can't really test you on your soft skills. And what's important is for you to identify your strengths and your limitations of these skills. So you might be really, really good at something, but you might not want to do that on a regular basis. You know, for instance, when I was in high school, I was really good in computers, so my parents thought I should be, you know, a computer programmer. Well, shoot me, because that's not at all what I like. In fact, the least thing I like about my job is the fact I spend too much time in front of a computer. So as much as it's a strength, it's not one that I want to apply. And then you also have to look at your limitations, because you might really want to do something, for instance, be a sales representative for a pharmaceutical company. However, you are more introverted and are intimidated by people of authority. Well, that doesn't really go together. So as much as you want to do that, you have a limitation in that area. So you have to be able to identify those. And I think what's more important is the strength side. What are your strengths? Don't look too much on the limitations, because you don't want to sell yourself short at the same time. But you want to think of, okay, what is it that I have to offer aside from my education? So what are, and you can read them here, the various skills that they might be looking for and that I know I have. And then what you really need to do is you have to prove it on your CV. So a lot of the times people will say, I have great communication skills, I'm autonomous, I can be a good team player, I take initiative, I'm creative. So all these are soft skills that aren't easily visible. Nor can I test them. But they come out on your CV in different ways, by the different involvements that you have. And it's not just because of your academics, it's because of everything else I already mentioned before. Your extracurriculars, your volunteer. So if you're somebody who was a lifeguard, or you were a youth counselor, maybe you worked in a retail store, as well as you're the leader in a local church organization, now I'm going to believe that you have leadership skills, you're a good communicator, and that you work well with people. So it's proof. And that's basically what they're looking for. Well, it's helping you identify what it is that they're looking for. Yes, these are adjectives that you often will use, and yes, it would be in a cover letter, and it would be in your objective or summary. You're not really going to have, you know, in a job description, excellent communicator. It's a result of. In your job descriptions, which we'll get to, is more concrete information of what you did. So it's more action verbs. I mean, it could easily read something like communicated, you know, information to interested clients, which leads me to believe you have hopefully good communication skills. So as I mentioned, most of you have a standard CV that you probably use since high school, and hopefully you've customized and changed around a little bit, and these are the main components of any CV, just to tell you. Most people have this in one way, shape, form, or another. The list or order of it isn't standard. So I'm not here to give you a template, because then you look like everybody else, and how is a future employer or boss supposed to differentiate your qualities from someone else if you all look the same? I'm going to go through each one, some quicker than others, just to tell you. And yes, for sure, demographics is first. I think that's kind of obvious. You want to have your name, your contact information at the top of the page. Any chance, any of you international student? Oh, wow, 3 out of 4. Bonus. Just to say, right now I'm going to go into a North American mode of writing a CV. There are international differences, so those that are coming into Canada need to know that, and those that are making applications outside of Canada need to know there's international differences. For example, in demographics, here in North America, we never include personal information, photo, marital status, citizenship. We just don't put it out there. But in international CVs in certain countries, I know Europe for a fact has several countries where it's standard and normal to put in a picture, to put in your marital status and other information. I know I made a huge list here, age, weight, driver's license. but normally we don't include that. It's name, address, phone number, email. That's pretty much it. If by chance there is a prerequisite that you need a driver's license or something like that, forklift operator, then you would definitely include it so the reader knows. But normally we do not. And just so you know, your email address, it's always best to include your McGill, because I think it's very professional. If for whatever reason you don't check your McGill account as often as another one, just ensure it's professional. Okay? I have seen quite a few that aren't. And for your phone number, here's a quick tip. If you only have a cell phone and no landline, and you're putting your cell phone, make sure you know that you have given this out to potential employers for an internship or a job or whatever have you, because you need to be able to answer in a professional manner at all times. So if, for instance, you're in a place you shouldn't answer and you realize you don't know the number, don't answer, because you don't want to be caught off guard. And if you have a choice between the two, make sure between a landline and a cell phone, use the one that's, I guess, more convenient for you. And make sure your voicemail is professional, too. I've heard a few of those doozies as well. So here's just a quick example of how it should look. A couple of tips that I'm going to give along the way have to do with formatting, and here's your first one. Your name is the biggest, your contact information is the smallest size font, and somewhere in between is the content. Always. Okay? Just so you know, your font is probably somewhere between 10.5 and 11. It all depends on the style that you're using. And margins all around, I tell everybody this when they come to see me for a CV review, 0.5. If you're in a Word document, click on margins, it's set at narrow. It's so you don't have too much white space. And this is how one of the P's is going to come into place. It has to do with positioning. That's one of the five P's that is coming up later on. So your career objective and your summary, here are two samples. It could be anywhere from two sentences to five sentences. It's like I explained before, it's like a mini cover letter. So if they're not going to read your cover letter, or they didn't request one, or you're fishing for an opportunity and you don't know how to compose an entire letter for somebody, this is great. It gives a reader a synopsis of who you are and what you want. So it has a little bit of experience, a little adjective there about your personality and ideally what you're looking for. And the way I see it is if you're fishing for an opportunity, so you're not making a direct internship application, it's always nice to narrow the department or the type of position. You don't need to be so specific that you want to exclude yourself from potential openings, but you want to give the reader a general idea of what you're looking for. So I think these are great examples. Any questions? Clarifications that you need? Any stories you want to share? You're all good so far? We'll keep rolling? Okay, let's keep going. So languages. How many of you speak more than one? Okay, that was cute. You all like one, two, three. You all put up your hands slowly but surely. So you will definitely have this section, languages. I have to remind people who only speak one that you don't need it because it's called languages. If it's only one, you don't have a section. It's obvious that it's just English or just French or just whatever language you submitted. Yes. Yes.
The way I did it in my CV is that I just put it under like highlights and put that I know several, I just put all the languages I know instead of putting it in a separate section. Should I still put it in a separate section?
I think you should have it in a separate section because it's multiple. It's not just one, two, not just two, okay. Because it needs to be easily found. Okay. And if it's embedded in a highlight section, they might not see it. They might be scanning, especially if it's a prerequisite and it's an asset in a job description. You want them to see it quickly.
Okay.
And the fact if it's more than two, then it should be bang in your face.
Okay.
And languages. You can turn it off just so you don't get caught. languages is very quick and easy to include in a CV. So even if they're not saying you need to have multiple languages, I think there's value in having this as one of your first and primary sections. And you don't need to be so specific, you know, between oral, reading, and writing, unless you're going for something that is required, like translation, journalism, interpretation, something like that. You can say basic, intermediate, fluent. Those are three of the pretty much standard levels. You want to say oral and written, that's fine, but I don't think you need to confuse the reader and break it down too much. What I do like is clarity. And clarity to me is this: language first, level of knowledge after. And if you have more than one, like this person has four, and a couple of them are of the same level, put them together, as you can see in my example. I think it's clear cut, it doesn't take up much space, and it's a powerful selling tool for yourself. Sound good? Easy enough. computer and technical skills, Mr. Research over there, his is going to be a little bit different. It's not just computer or technical. He's probably going to have a section with lab skills included. Here, I think it's very important that you list anything and everything that you know. Some people feel as if they maybe use an internal software somewhere for a summer job that it's not worth putting down because it means nothing to no one because it has some gibberish name, but I think it has value because it just shows that you are capable of learning an internal in-house software system. So yes, there's the standard Microsoft Office and you need to be specific, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Access, because if you write just Office, they're going to think you know Access, which a lot of people don't. And any operating systems that you might know, and then go into, well, actually nobody here is in computers, so you're not going to have subsections. For instance, operating systems, hardware, software. If you're in computer science and you were going for a programming job, you would definitely have a bigger section. For just standard computer skills, you just list them. Don't put level of proficiency, because your definition of proficient or efficient is not necessarily the same as mine, so don't sell yourself short, just list it, okay? For research, what you might want to do is have a section that says skills, and underneath you would have computer and then list, and laboratory and then list, or vice versa, all depending where you're at. Here's a little example. All depending where you're at. You know, sometimes you only have basic theoretical knowledge of some lab techniques and you haven't put it into practice yet and you feel you shouldn't be advertising it so hardly, but it does have value to put in a list, so I think you should include it. Yeah.
Is Minerva a software?
Yes, you can include Minerva.
Seriously?
Yeah. In Minerva, if you know the backbones of it, if you have access to it, not because you're using it. No, okay. No, it's Banner that's actually behind it, so my fault for jumping the gun to that. I thought you meant because you know Banner. No, so no, don't put Minerva. No. All right, any questions? Yes?
Could you please repeat how do you put your... what's it called? Demographics things on the sheet, like where exactly?
Your name and contact
yeah.
information at the top.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want to say put it in the middle. You can do the way you want because, again, I don't want to give you a template or a format. I don't even tell you what font to use. I can tell you don't use anything in italics because it's hard to read. But if you want to have your name on the left and your contact info on the right and they're at the same level, that's great. You want to have it one on top of the other, that's great. As long as your name jumps to me, that's why it's the biggest font. And your contact information is the smallest font. And personally and professionally, what I like is a line that separates the two. Your contact and your content. Those are the two main things of your CV, right? Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's okay. Do you have another question?
Yeah.
That's fine. Go ahead.
For the languages, like my first language is French, but I do understand English, obviously, but I'm not as, I'd say, at my ease in English than in French.
Right.
How would I qualify that?
All depending on what language you're submitting your application in. To be honest, you're fluently bilingual, you know both, you're educated in both. So if you're submitting a French application, then write French and English, or Français and Anglais. And if it's the other way around, it's an English application, write English and French. I understand if you really want to clarify, you know, that French is your native language, mother tongue, you can. If you're going for something that really requires the bilingualism, it's really a question of who's reading it for what reason and what are they looking for. And this is when it's important for you to bring your CV to a career advisor and have it reviewed. And then that way we can pretend we're that person when we're looking at it. So I can tell you, you know, quick answers. But when you come to me later on, then I can say, hey, you know what? Maybe you should put French first because this is what they're looking for. Okay? All right. Keep going. So education and following this is work experience. So these are the two sections that are kind of like the bulk of your CV, right? And I think what's really important is that you understand the reader is not normally an academic. So you have to lay out the information for them easily. So you can't put a abbreviations, you can't put acronyms, you can't put course codes, which I've seen a lot. You just want to lay it out, okay? Unless, of course, you're making an academic application, then maybe you can fiddle around with that a little bit more. So really what you want to do is highlight what you did and where you did it, and then give information about it. And that's exactly the same for experience, whether in a minute that we're going to talk about work or volunteer or extracurricular, you want to highlight what you did, where you did it, and details about it. So I call each of these parts entries. So one entry is going to be McGill University, your degree, and information about it. And before that, below that, another entry will be CEGEP, if you were in Montreal, which clearly three of you weren't because you're international students, or high school. So your high school diploma, where you did it, and information about it. And that's basically the mapping of your CV and the content. Chronological order, most recent by most past. Now, here's a quick question for you. What if it ended at the same time, which goes before the other one? So forget education, let's just say, or you did two side certificates. You did a CPR course and you did some other training, and the end date was the same. How do you put it in chronological order?
Do you put CPR courses under this?
Yeah, you can. Education, training, additional. Because, see, most people think chronological order is by when you started something. But it's actually by when you ended it. So if they both ended at the same time, then yes, you put the one that you started most recently, and that ended before the other one. Okay? Or if, say, for instance, you are at McGill right now, which you are, and your degree is ongoing, so the end date actually says present, but you did a CPR course simultaneously, where does it go? It goes after, right? Even though it's finished, because it's the end date. Even though you might have started it before you started your undergraduate degree, it's finished. So it's just, some people get a little bit confused. It's chronological order by end date, not by beginning date. End date first. Yes?
Is it better to if you're doing it right now, is it better to write present or to write the finishing date?
It's better to write, good question by the way, it's better to write to present unless you are making an application for something that's right after graduation and it's imminent. So you're graduating in April or May 2015, you're making an application for internships or opportunities that are starting thereafter, then you can write May 2015 because it's close. If it's 2017, please don't. I've had a few people who write that and it's too far away. So just write to present. Yeah.
If you took a first aid course, CPR course, and you did it like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. You still put it down?
Absolutely. It just shows an aptitude, and it shows an interest, and it demonstrates a lot. I mean, you have a skill set that you obtained. You might not have renewed it, but it has value. In 10 years from now, if you've never renewed it, then I'm thinking the value is probably lost. But right now, there's not really anything that you've done that's worth eliminating except maybe, you know, a paper route that you did in high school or babysitting that you did in high school. But things that you've done in the latter years of high school, if you didn't do CEGEP, for instance, grade 10, grade 11, that are relevant. It doesn't have to be equal to what you're looking for, but they're relevant. They show a continuum of interest and involvement. And especially if, say, in high school you excelled academically and you continue to excel academically at McGill, you want to make reference to it. So it's important. So back to education, just to say. The debate with every entry in education as well as experience is, do I put what I did first and then where I did it, or do I put where I did it and then what I did? So in other words, do I write McGill University, Montreal, Quebec first, or do I write Bachelor of Science, Biology major first? It's entirely up to you. They both have value. I can't tell you when the person that's receiving it what they regard most valuable. I think it's fantastic that you're here at McGill and you're going to get a degree from McGill, and it's kudos to you and your level of intelligence. But someone else might be more concerned with what you studied as opposed to where you studied. So I personally, professionally, prefer to know what you did than where you did it right now. In 10 or 15 years, when you've built your career, it might be the reverse. But I'm really interested in the area that you've studied in. But I'm one person, one opinion. It's up to you to decide which one you want to do. Yes.
Well, your opinion matters. And
thank you.
So if I put McGill University, do I just not put Montreal, Quebec? I just, like, take it.
No, you do. You do. Everything, anytime you refer to where you did something, it has to be here. There you go. It has to have location. Everything has location. So McGill University, Montreal, Quebec,
okay, I see.
And when we get into experience, it's going to be the same thing. If you worked for the Yellow Door, it's going to be Montreal, Quebec. Back home, wherever you're from, you're going to write the country as well. So you definitely have to say where it was. So you're, for instance, this example, it's a Bachelor of Arts, include your major, your minor, your concentration, your double major, your honors, whatever it is, include it and spell it out. The bullets are basically based on if you want to highlight academic performance, scholarships, awards. That said, if it's a large section, you're going to want to create it on your own, on its own. So if you have like three, four or more, you can have a whole section called awards and scholarships or awards and achievements. Just a couple, then you can include it here. The other thing that you might want to do is write relevant courses, and this is what I was referring to. Don't put course numbers. It doesn't mean anything to anyone. Put course titles or descriptions, and a couple. You know, not everything that you took in the last 3 years, because I understand it might all be relevant, sort of, but highlight the ones that speak to the reader. As far as GPA, that's totally up to you guys. I can't make that decision for you. I think there's value if you have a high CGPA, but it's also dependent on what the reader thinks. If you think a 3.2 in physics is amazing, somebody else might not. If you think a 3.7 in economics is beyond normal, somebody else might not. My theory is, and you can apply this if you'd like, if it's important to the reader, they would probably ask for your transcript. That said, you could also be very proud of your performance, and I don't want to take away from it, so include it if you feel there's value. A point to add, though, make sure you write that it's out of a 4.0, because not every institution's GPAs are out of a 4.0, so you just want to clarify, because that'd be horrible if theirs was out of a 4.3 and you're writing 3.7. It doesn't look the same all of a sudden. Yes, sir. Microphone.
On that point, would you do like 3.5 out of 4.0, or would you do how would you write it? You'd write 3.5/4.0. Okay,
yeah.
And then do you also include for example, on LinkedIn, when you have your education, it says in like blue links, like activities you did, like so say you're the president of an organization at McGill University,
That would be later.
Under leadership.
That's going to be, it depends. This is where we got to get into the nitty gritty of balancing out your CV. Can you turn your microphone off?
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's going to be after, because that's all part of your experience, your skill set, so your extracurricular, volunteer, your involvement. So don't let it get lost. Education, keep it for the educated academic portion of what you want to share to the reader. So experience, so we can move forward. Yes?
Sorry, but just about the education.
Sure.
When do we start? Like from high school or?
Yes, because it's great that you're at McGill. You know, and everybody knows you had to have had some form of education before coming here, right? You had to pass your high school or CEGEP if you're from Montreal. You should always include the preceding academic institution that you came from, especially if you're international, because it shows the diversity. So yes, you should. Once you go forward, say you went to a PhD and a master's and then a PhD and who knows, a postdoc after that, then I don't think you're going to be having your high school. At some point, you might even decide to drop your bachelor's because it's kind of like self-evident and now you're a specialist in a completely different area. But right now, status quo, include the academic institution that's preceding McGill's. All good?
Just last question about the chronology.
Sorry?
The chronology?
Yes.
It's the most recent one to the
most past.
So, like, we would start with McGill and end with the high school, for example.
That's right. That's right. That's the way you're going to do it. Yes.
Okay. I include the education at the end of my CV.
Okay.
Is that not recommended?
That's going to be something we're going to touch upon. Okay. And that's when you're customizing. There's a reason that you chose to put it towards the end of your CV, because you have other items, entries that have more value or are stronger selling point to the reader. The way I refer to it is, if you had an interview for that position, that opportunity, that internship, and they asked you, what three things sell you for this job? What three things most qualify you for this position? Then those are the first three sections of your CV. Those are the three things that you should be highlighting in your cover letter. So it's always putting yourself in the shoes of the reader when making an application. So again, this is customizing. This is not having a master CV. This is how to deal with the information afterwards. And there is no right or wrong. It's just getting it powerful, making it powerful. Okay? So under experience, a lot of you, and this is fine, this is normal, you have work experience, volunteer experience, extracurricular activities. There's value in everything that you've done. Most often than not, though, what you've been paid for hasn't necessarily been related to the area of interest or the area of study. You need money. Yeah, so you take that bartending job, you take that, you know, youth worker job, you take that job at the library, and it says a lot. It says commitment, it says, you know, work and school balance, it says a lot about you. But the volunteer and the extracurricular says a lot about your level of interest, where you spend your spare time, your commitment, and it shows a different side of you. So I don't think you have to have a work experience, volunteer, and extracurricular all separate. I think you can mix it all up depending on what the reader wants to see. So you could play with section titles, and you referred to it before. Leadership experience could be one. Career-related, professional experience. It could be research experience. It could be international experience. It could be anything. And then you get to pick and choose whether you got paid for it or you didn't get paid for it. Goes in that nice section, tells the reader, bang, look at this. This is what sells me for that opportunity. This is why I think I'm qualified for that internship, that position. A lot of value. Everything else, some of you think, go under the rug, put it aside, not so much. It still says a lot about your strengths, right? And your skill sets, right? So you want to keep it. So now you can put it in a section called additional experience. So instead of having three different sections, you can make two. And you tell the reader, look at this first, but check out this. Because not only have I worked internationally, I've done a study abroad, I've been involved with my local community, I've done a lot pro bono work, let's just say, but I also managed to have a job that was 25 hours a week, I've maintained the same retail position for 3 years. That says a lot about you as an individual and your work ethic. So very much like education, experience has to be what you did, where you did it, and tell me about it. Tell me about it is not I was responsible for, my duties included, I was involved. No, 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 no. No word I. There's no I in your CV, okay? And if there is, take it out. The only place you could potentially have it is objective or summary. Anywhere else, it isn't. And here you have to start with a bang. You have to start with action verbs. Trained new employees, operated the cash. I know I'm taking very basic examples here. edited articles, collected information, evaluated, managed. There's so many different words out there that you could use. It's an action verb. That's what it starts with. So it gets to the point fast. A lot of people have a question of how many bullets do I include? Well, you know what? I don't know what you did, so I can't tell you. 2 bullets, 3 bullets, 5 bullets. What I can tell you, and here's another quick tip, is as long as it's more than a few words. If you have 6 bullets and each bullet has 3 words in it, then there's something wrong with that. It looks funny. You know, put them, package them together, you know, make them quasi-sentences is basically what they are.
So would you recommend having it?
Additional. I love the word additional. Other just sounds so under the rug.
Experience bold and highlighted. I mean, bold and underlined. And
yes.
Highlighted experiences. Just.
No. Your section title is highlighted or relevant or career related or professional. That's your section title, and then it starts with each entry right away. It's not title, subtitle. It's a section title. That's just the way it is, like this. So it's what you did, where you did it, and information about it. that's the best format to go with. Is that all good? Yes, you have a question. Yeah.
So for experience, at least in my case, I just put experience and then all the relevant experience all mixed together. What would I put for additional experience? Because I'm mixing it all together. I mean, I feel all my experience is good experience. So.
Well, you don't need a section that has additional. The thing is, your experience that you've mixed everything together has to be chronological order. So this is where there's value in separating sections. So you could be so lucky that everything you've been involved in falls perfectly in line with what you're applying for and chronologically. Because sometimes we could have four entries in a section, but it's entry number 1 and 4 that you want to highlight to the reader. So the only way to get it out of work experience is to throw it in a different title. Because as soon as you take away the word work, it's anything and everything that you were involved in. You didn't have to get paid for it. So this is where it has value. Does that make sense for you guys? It's all good? Yeah? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
How do you do that? Like the time, summers, and how do you make it like in Word?
How do I get the formatting to work this way?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, how do you put it like...
Oh, how do I get the dates justified to the right margin?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, honestly, you just put your cursor after supervisor, you tab until you get to a certain point, and then you press space, and once it falls to the next line, you go, oh, eliminate one more space. Just to say. I know it sounds so technical.
So it goes first, most recent experience down.
That's right. So anything that ends with present has got to be near the top, that's for sure. Most recent by end date, then first date. So I've already covered this, basically, why there's value in all your extracurricular activities, whether they are on campus or off campus. Again, this is an area where a lot of people get confused. What's extracurricular? What's volunteer? That's basically by definition, that's what it is. Extracurricular means outside of the classroom, yet still affiliated with an academic institution. Volunteer is usually off campus, off the academic institution territory, so it's within your community. We just use this all interchangeably here, so don't you worry about it. I think there's a lot of value, and I've already covered why, and it's a great icebreaker. And just to give you a little anecdote, because some people were also wondering why they need to include, sports, travel, music. Well, it speaks to your aptitude, it speaks to your skill set, it speaks to your interest, and it speaks to an individual on a personal level. And here's my anecdote story very quickly because we're starting to run out of time. I used to be a recruiter before I came to McGill, a headhunter kind of person. Don't like the word headhunter, but that's basically what I did. I sold people to companies is what it was. And I had two clients. I had two candidates. My client is the employer that's paying me to find these two candidates. Two guys, exactly the same background, same education, same level of involvement in a particular industry, entry-level position, so you can't really say he's got more experience than the other. And so the employer, my client, finally said, okay, I'm going to choose, say, John over Matt. And I was like, well, at the end of the day, I'm happy, right? But tell me, why did you choose John over Matt? And she's like, well, actually, John plays hockey, and our hockey team is really struggling here. So they had an industry-based team, and yeah, so that was a final decision. Doesn't happen too often, but it has happened. So it's worthwhile putting it in. What I want to tell you, though, is if you're adding additional interest at the bottom, and you are talking about music, travel, arts, be specific, you know. Don't just say you like it because you just read about it, or travel is very interesting but you've never done it. You know, tell me, what sports are you involved in? Is it on a leisure basis? Is it competitive? What countries have you gone to? If it's so many, then what continents have you gone to? Music, what level are you at? Do you have a band? I think it's worthwhile. It can't be overpowering the other information. That's why this is one of those things that is almost always at the end. Yes, sir. Education? No. No, because it's not to do with your academic side of the education. It's like the activities that you've been involved in or leadership. It would fall suit perhaps here. Maybe it would fall in additional experience. It depends if you took a leadership role, if you were also involved in fundraising. But if you were, say, on the rugby team, then it would be most likely here under sports. That said, I don't know what you're applying for, you know. Maybe, and I've had in the past, students that are going into sports journalism or something that's related, so you'll want to have it higher up in your CV.
So you would put So for volunteer and extracurriculars, do you put extracurricular activities and then list that all underneath the volunteer and sports and outside of school? Or?
I'd like to say you could, but in all honesty, this is a particular question where I would like to see how you've already packaged the information, and then I could say, you know what, this layout works great, how about we shift this here, you know what, this doesn't seem to fit with this title based on the other sections that you've put in, so that's when you definitely have to come to the CAPS office, so then we could look at it as an individual CV as opposed to a general question where I'm trying to visualize what you're trying to explain and we might miscommunicate, so I don't want to give you a bad answer, put it that way. You can come to CAPS. We have daily drop-in Monday to Friday. It's advertised on our website, mcgill.ca/CAPS, or you can call or pop by to make an appointment with a career advisor where you'll have more time to talk about your CV, cover letter, and any other issues that you want to talk about. Yes, and then yes.
Do you find this additional interest section is relevant for every application we'll be doing? Because I remember I applied to this big corporation, and I took it out because I thought that maybe they're looking for something very serious, they're not looking for this type of section, but I do like putting it in anyway. Should I still keep it in no matter what?
I like the way you phrase that, because you said you like keeping it in. So it's your CV, it's your marketing brochure, it's your piece of material that advertises you, and if you identify with that part of you, then there is value. They might not even just look at it, you know. It's usually near the bottom, it's not too intense, hopefully. So there is no harm, no foul in including it. That's the way I see it. If for whatever reason it's making you bump to page 2, page 3, and now all of a sudden now it's a balancing issue of trying to get the material in, then perhaps I'd say shorten it. At worst case, take it out. But very rarely have I ever seen that be the case. Yes?
So experience and extracurricular activities are two different sections?
Absolutely, yes.
So what's in experience then? Like,
well, it's your... Okay, so let's back up one step. Work experience is what you got paid for. Volunteer, extracurricular, and all that is what you didn't get paid for. In certain instances, it's easy to keep those distinct two sections, and the reader's going to be happy and find the information they want easily. Sometimes you need to package and combine them and come up with new section titles, like I mentioned, highlighted, professional, leadership, international experience, and then the other stuff would fall in additional experience. Now, I'm playing and using this terminology. It might not work for you in particular. You might use something completely different. You might say, well, I want this to say relevant, and I clearly want this to say volunteer and extracurricular because that's what it was and it works perfectly for me and it reflects who I am. So perfect, then do that. What I'm just saying is that you don't have to have that cookie cutter CV you did in high school where it's this, 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 and this. Customized to the reader, which is always what I'm going for. Okay? Yay. So references available upon request is basically the last sentence of your CV. I know it's standard. Everybody knows that this is implied. However, it also tells the reader the end. No page 2 missing, no page 3 missing. And at some point, you probably will need to submit your references, which is a completely separate document. Usually the top part looks exactly like your CV, so it's your own personal letterhead. And then you have to give full contact details for your references. But right now, for all intents and purposes, references available upon request is what you need at the bottom. I did because we're running out of time, and I got to get to that 5 P's of your CV because I think it's so important. Yeah.
At the bottom, who your references are.
No, you don't. You only write references available upon request, period, the end. When they ask after an interview or before an interview, then you submit a separate document. Never send it unless they need it. Okay? Okay, good. Sorry if I am going quickly. I do apologize. This is just an awareness slide. It's telling you, like I mentioned before, there are different types of CVs basically, you know, there's international, there's North American. There's also what we distinguish between chronological and functional. Right now, you guys basically are, we're talking the chronological CV. There's also a difference between CV and resume, to be honest with you. Somehow in Quebec, we decided to use the words interchangeably. A resume is really what we're talking about. It's a 1 to 2 page document that outlines your history and everything about you. A CV is a detailed document that could run anywhere up to 10, 15, 30 pages, especially if you're a professor, that has publications, presentations, everything in like full, full detail. So with all due respect, we are talking resume. We call it a CV. Sorry. And style also depends on, and layout also depends on industry, what you're going for. So this is where when you meet with an advisor, they can tell you, oh, you know what, if you're looking for this industry or this area, they tend to like these section titles, they tend to like this type of profile, they tend to like these types of terminologies, these kinds of buzzwords. So again, no template here, tips and advice on how to customize for each application that you make. So we're going to go zoom, zoom, zoom now. You ready? I already made a few points on the packaging because this is what's really important. Paper, it's white paper. I know that sounds so silly, but trust me, that's what it is. Most of the time you're sending electronic anyways. The font we already discussed, it's font size, I've already talked to you. The white space, that's why we use the white margins. And when I mention here the length, it has to do with the fact that if you're going over a page, which you very well and should probably go over, it shouldn't finish before the two-thirds mark of that second page. So if you have a page and a bit, then you got to try and fit it on one page. So keep it balanced is basically what I want it to see. I want it to be. I think it's really important. It's not too tight. It's not too loose. It looks like a nice document.
So
yes.
So 2 pages is okay.
Two pages is fine. Most often than not, if you're giving a CV, you don't do the recto verso. I don't know why. It just seems to be this old professional rule.
Two pages,
yeah. But don't hold me to it. If you want to do recto verso, go ahead.
I've always heard only 1 page.
Yes, in the U.S., most people prefer it's 1 page. In Canada, I would have to say it's very exclusive to finance, business, consulting, where it is a 1 page document normally, so you try and pack it all in. Other than that, usually standard across Canada, we think of a 2-page CV. The second page, at least half to 2/3 full, is the way we see it.
The font is
usually, this is like, again, usually, or else I'm going to make you a cookie cutter template guy, which I don't want to do. About 10 and a half or 11 is the content. Your name is the biggest, your contact information is the smallest, content somewhere around that size. Sound good? Yes, that's right. That's right. So positioning, we talked a lot about this, especially in changing the section titles and thinking about the reader. It's super important because if I am receiving 200 applications for the next internship posting that I've done, and I'm only going to be looking quickly, like literally like this, scanning. So where you put the information is so important to me. So the packaging, that it's easy, that you don't have a template, that I can access it fast. And that's why I talked all this time about what you did, where you did it, and details about it. Because that's what a person is attracted to. Okay? No good, no questions? Punch. It has to have punch. And I'm always doing this. When I see students and they come in for CV review, I always say, I want to find it, and I want to find it now. And I think that's probably because I used to be a recruiter before I came to McGill, and that's what was so important to me is when I was evaluating potential candidates for my clients, I needed to make sure I found it quickly or else they wouldn't. And if it didn't speak to me, how am I supposed to sell it to somebody else? So that's the way I look at your CVs. It's got to speak to me to help you sell yourself for an internship or any application down the road. So you want to make sure it has what they're looking for. So it's not just that it's easy to find, it's that when they find it, it speaks to them. So it provides the criteria, the skills, the attributes. All the self-assessment part that we talked about, what are your strengths and your limitations, it needs to pop out here. That's what's really important. personality. This is a little bit in reference to your question about the interest section, like does it reflect me and who I am, and I think it's very important. So again, we don't want a template where you all look the same, because I'm not going to find the you behind it. Believe it or not, you have a way of writing, you have a way of formatting that just expresses your own personality. And so when you put it all together, I'm going to kind of get who I think I'm looking at. The cover letter is a huge reflection of your personality, but that's tomorrow's discussion, not today's. So that's another one of the P's, and the last one is that it's professional. It's your marketing brochure. It needs to be professional, going back to that professional email address, having a professional voicemail, not using slang. And I've seen a lot of students use slang, kind of trying to show that you're an easygoing candidate, but I don't think it's appropriate. Think of the buzzwords and terminology that they would want to see and make sure those appear in that place. So here's a quick example. Again, your section titles can be justified to the left if you want. They don't have to be in the middle. But when you look at this, I find it so easy to catch the information. I can see who the person is. Their address and contact information is secondary, so it's not bombarding my vision. There's not too much white. There's not too much black. I can easily find what they did, where they did it, and details about it. So this is just a quick example. You like the way it looks?
Yeah.
Interesting style. And if you want to see different styles, we have so many sample books in our library for CVs for all different types of positions and industries. You can thumb through it and you can say, like it, don't like it, like it, don't like it. Because I do that with students all the time. I'll pick one up, say it's special for communication type positions, and I can look at it like this and I can tell them, well, I don't really like that one. Oh, this one's nice, or maybe a combination of these two. And then you'll find the one that works best for you. So very quick steps for success is just highlighting the last few things that we talked about. You can read through this while I just do a quick summary, because I'm over time and I need to go, and I also see we're going to lose the laptop. CAPS has a lot of resources for you. I know you're in a position where you might be making applications, you might not be making applications, so it's to your convenience, the drop-ins, whenever you want. A lot of material in our library. We also have guides online, we have podcasts online, and if you forgot anything I said, what we just talked about today will be online as well, so you'll have easy access to the information. Yes, sir? I'll give it to you afterwards. That's not a problem. I did, and I will. I promise. So just a quick thing. These are our publications that are used and viewed the most often. You can find them on the CAPS website under podcasts and publications. They're great guides. They summarize everything that you need to know for all these steps of the job search, CV, cover letter, networking, interviewing. So I'd be happy to see you back here tomorrow to discuss cover letter. And if not, then I'm going to wish you good luck in your applications, and I hope to see you one-on-one in my office sometime soon. Thanks.